Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody, coast to coast, This Week in America. A Hunter's Life Lived by Michael Hunt is his story. The highs and lows, born in Barbados during the Second World War, the odds against him from day one. And at age 8 to 9, he had tetanus. At one point, his mother was called to his bedside as he was ebbing away. Michael sailed across the Atlantic from Barbados to England in 1960, joined the Army, where he became a parachutist. He considers himself lucky to have done what he's done, and he says if he can do it, well, you can do it as well. Now living in the City of London complex, A Hunter's Life Lived from Blue Ink Scribble by Michael Hunt, coming to us via Skype from London on This Week in America. Michael, welcome to the program, sir. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Rick.
So much to talk about in this book, and with the video version, I mentioned you were a parachutist. You've got a medal on the lapel of your sport coat there. Tell me what that is.
It is a veteran's medal that says I've done the time, basically.
Really?
I was a volunteer in the Army.
Yes. That is amazing.
I went along, volunteered, 19, or just on going on 20, didn't know what I was doing, and it seemed exciting. I did the course. Very tough it was at the time. It was a course designed by mad men for mad young men. And I passed, I think. Went on to do my training at RAF Abington, learning to jump out of an airplane. First, it was a balloon, which you just go up to 1,000 feet and you jump out. But the training you did in synthetic training, you land properly, whether it's front back or backwards back or whatever. You land and roll. Get up and tie your chute down and get it ready for the next orders.
I mean, that's just an amazing story. And when you think of 7, 8 years old in that category, you really, the family was concerned whether you were going to live or not. And here you are years later, jumping out of airplanes. I mean, what
that's
a dramatic
right.
turnaround. Did that go through your mind at any point? Here's this young child that almost didn't make it to young adult, and now I'm in the military, and I'm jumping out of airplanes.
Yeah, I jokingly put it down to say the doctor must have given me a horse injection or something. Because quite frankly, I have not had much illness through my life, having been so close. But I did have prostate trouble, but they fixed that as well. So it must have been a horse injection they gave me at the hospital.
Well, whatever it was, it worked. And you'll find all of these great stories in Michael's past in his book, A Hunter's Life Lived. The book's available at Amazon.com. If you're Googling it, Michael Hunt, and that's H-U-N-T-E. All this information up on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Such a fascinating life. It's fun to share your life. It's motivating. Like you say, your attitude is, hey, I did it. You can do it too. What was the inspiration in writing this book? Why did you decide to write A Hunter's Life Lived?
Well, why I decided to write. A drinking friend of mine in a pub, he says, why don't you write a book about your life? He says, nobody knows about your life, because we here in London was just, some of us were being accused of just freeloaders. We came here to take what the British had. So he says, nobody knew. All they knew about was robbing, what you call it, the boy on the beach.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Know what you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah. You know, the boy on the beach and whatever. So they just think that we were pretty stupid. They didn't understand that in the First World War, men came from the Caribbean to fight, and they came back again in the 40s to fight. But still, none of that goes on, you know. And so I said, well, yes, okay, I'll sit down and write. And I started to write it a long time ago. I thought it was going to be easy, but I'm dyslexic.
Ah, okay. So it was a challenge.
It was a challenge. I tried writing longhand. That did not work. So I had to wait till time catch up with me when we have the spell check on the computer. And even that, you can go wrong, and I have been wrong. So I have this dear friend of mine called Caroline who decided to edit it out for me and put the words in the right places. I might have used the right words in the wrong places.
You know, that's an amazing story, because you talk about all the challenges you overcame. If I can do it, anybody can do it. Here you're a successful author battling dyslexia and able to overcome that. and to get the book done, which had to be a feeling of great accomplishment. Tell me a little bit about yourself, especially Barbados. That's one of those where I've heard of it, but I'm not quite sure where it is. I'm not quite sure what goes on there. Talk a little bit about your background that shaped who you are today.
Well, Barbados in the Caribbean is just off between, it's just off by itself, basically. Not many storms, but in 1950, I think it was 56, Storm Jeanette moved over the island and nearly flattened every wooden house. Only most of the stone buildings survive. As a young kid, I was born in 41, so 50, whatever that was, I walked down to the school, St. Giles Boys School, now emptied, and I used to watch the galvanized flying off the roofs. Just literally take it away and flying off the roofs. And I was kind of like Superman. They can't touch me. How stupid I was. Luckily, they pass over and they roll around, and I watch them as they come off the rotors and fly, and I just kept watching them, and it's rain coming down, women with their children passing me and everything, and I was gently walking. But that was more stupid than anything else, I think. But then I went and joined the parachutes and jumped out of planes.
Yes.
Some people might think that that was stupid as well.
Well, you did think you were Superman, apparently, at that point, walking through the neighborhood and then jumping out of airplanes as well. Tell me a little bit of madness. Yes. Tell me a little bit about the book. And what's really fascinating is you still have stories to tell. I mean, living a life full right up to this day. Talk about the book. Where did the ideas come from? Why did you decide, I want to write this?
Well, I decided a long time ago I wanted to ghost it. But a friend interrupted, sorry, my phone.
It's okay.
I wanted to ghost it with a friend of mine called Colin McInnes. And he looked at me and he says, he was a very successful writer. And he says, you want me to ghost it? And I thought, well, no, better do this myself. And it took a time to get going and going and going. And yes, I had to. Yes, I'm going to do a part two. Because there's a lot in it I left out. I speared the dead, my mother and father and a few people. I speared them. But I was left alone to go to school. And the school teachers at the time wasn't very good. I was beaten. I had to really run away from school. If you can begin to understand that. I was beaten for not being able to spell and not knowing my tables. Today, I still don't know my tables. I know some, I don't know them all. Some things sticks with me, other things just not important. So they just move away off my head, move on. I can tell, I used to run away and go to the cinema. And I used to go and visit a crocodile in the park. To go and poke him and try and talk to him and everything because nobody at school was making sense. So I thought I'll talk to the crocodile. Anyhow, he's died now, the poor crocodile. I went to look for him the other day. They told me he died some years ago.
Oh.
So yes, the school days were very bad, but this is 19, I born in 41, so all later 40s. I grew up on the education, elementary, Britain where I am now, couldn't have cared about us, or maybe they didn't have anything to give us. So we were nearly on starving rations, really. We had to go and pick up potatoes and sugarcane. It was horrible. I wish that on nobody, but it was wartime. Because all the produce from there, including cotton, came to England. Got to remember that. Sugarcane came to England. And also to the young men came and fought. So there was nobody looking after the land back there in the Caribbean, in Barbados particularly. So it was difficult times. Difficult time needs different measures. So then, yes, when I became, 14, I think, I just one day turn up at school. My body says, you're not going in there. So I hover around the gate and I just walked on. I did not go back. Nobody came looking for me. Nobody missed me. How incredible. Nobody missed me. Miss Michael Hunt, not here, so whatever. But that was the days. That probably would have been 1940, 47 or something like that. But Europe, too, don't forget, Europe was in a mess 2 days after, 2 years after the war ended.
Yes, yes.
So I just muddled through.
You have seen so much in your life. Our guest on the program is Michael Hunt. That's H-U-N-T-E. His book is A Hunter's Life Lived. I'm glad to hear there's going to be a sequel. And you mentioned, and I can't believe it, born in 1941. You were a very young man, mentally, physically, as we're talking here. You're still loving life, aren't you? You're still getting the most out of this.
Oh, yes, I am 80. I just celebrated my 80th birthday in January. And, touch wood, I'm as fit as a fiddle. So it must be that injection I received at the hospital to get rid of my tetanus.
We go back to
that's what I put it on to anyway.
Well,
it might
yes.
be natural genes. It might be the life I live. It is the fitness that I produce and going through the P Company. P Company is a course you have to take to pass the para course. It is physical fitness and mental fitness. You do all sorts of strange things. But that might have been ignorance as a 19-year-old when I did that. But I passed with flying colors.
And successfully jumped out of airplanes. Yes, still here. Let's go back and talk about that. When you're what, around 1960, you cross the Atlantic going from Barbados to England. Talk about that, the motivation to do that. Maybe I don't necessarily want to say fear, but there had to be some trepidation. Boy, you were off on the ocean, going to a new world, a whole new life. What do you remember about that?
I remember in let's go back to Barbados. In Barbados, there was train lines to take the sugar to the docks, but no trains. During the war years, the train lines was confiscated, put on a ship, and sent back to England as part of the war effort, I think it was called. And so hadn't coming to London from Southampton, I looked out of the train window, and I got burnt in my eyes with coal speckles that coming out of the chimney. That was a no-no. But nobody, I looked out to see what was happening. The first time I was on a train, chuck.
Yes.
I had seen a train before in the Azores because we spent a few hours in the Azores. But there we are. I landed at Waterloo and went to an uncle of mine who was here. And a few days I walked around, getting to know my bearings. And one day, I think I had a job washing cars or something. And that didn't work out either. And I just find myself in the war office in Trafalgar Square, went in, got the brochure, took it home, filled it out, and took it back in, sit down and had the test, a sight test. There was no medical test, just a sight test and whatever. And I passed. They sent me a ticket. I thought this was good. I get a real ticket from Waterloo to Aldershot.
Yes.
And I bought the kit, shaving kit and everything, and I turn up in Aldershot. The rest, as they say, is history.
Is history. And you will find it in Michael's book. It's so well written, A Hunter's Life Lived by Michael Hunt. That's Hunte. What do you hope readers take away from reading your book, A Hunter's Life Lived? Just very entertaining stories there, stories that are inspirational as well. But it's more than just stories. Like I said, I mentioned the inspirational, the motivational part of it. It really is an uplifting story. What do you want readers to take away after they've read the book?
It's a life lived, a life lived, my life. I live it. I'm still living it. And I'm telling the story the best I can.
Well, and you're doing it.
And all the little bits that wouldn't normally have in a conversation like now. But if you read it, you'll see little nuggets of conversation that I lived there and here. And being homeless in London, that was another story altogether.
Now, will
I slept at every major station in London.
Wow. Now, will that be in the new book, the next book?
Yes, that will definitely be in the new book. Yes.
Well,
and I met my father in London for the first time. I'm 19 years old.
Wow.
And my father's in London. It's his address I use on the immigration form because they like to know where you're going. I met him. But we were two men. I was raised by my mother. So we couldn't get on. That's why I said, well, I can't take this. You don't. London in 1960 wasn't started to swing yet. But I learned a life and I stick around. And he says, I close my doors at 9 or 10 o'clock or something like that. And I said, all right, then. And one day he locked me out and I went and slept in a graveyard. I still pass there today, and I say, yeah, I spent some nights there.
Wait.
I spent some nights there, whatever. So, and so we never got on because I had nothing from the man. I had nothing of his. I cannot say my father showed me how to saw. My father showed me what is what and what is what. He just, like most men at the time, I just packed up and run. He leave his seed and he went. And then he says, oh, he was proud to show me off. Proud to show, here's my son. I was a man now, you know, here's my son, right? Yeah. I stayed here in this flat now that I'm in because I had to bury him with my own money. And I took over the ownership of it. It was rented. I had to buy it. And but he was proud to show me off after I became a man, which he had no input whatsoever. Between born and being 19, I saw him once, I think.
Amazing.
Could have been twice, so, but he hid from me.
Mom did all the work, and then Dad, because she did it well, is taking credit for, here's Michael, isn't he a nice young man? And
that's right. Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Didn't
he used to take
you.
Me to pub and bring me up and introduce me to his English friends, drinking friends they were. And here was this young man, oh, he's in the army. Yeah, right. And when I wanted to join the army, he said, what do you want to go in the army for? 6 years later, I was coming out and he said, what do you want to come out for?
Boy, all of these stories in Michael's book, a fascinating read, A Hunter's Life Lived, Michael Hunt, H-U-N-T-E. A couple minutes left in the program. I have no idea where all the time is going.
Well, there
here.
We are. We whatever.
Where do you
we
get
could
your...
meet again.
Yeah, where do you get your ideas for writing? Where does that come from? I guess your memory is the best place to come up with these
stories. Yes, my memory is good. And growing up, I used the cinema quite a lot. It's only recently I realized watching Hollywood cinema, not everything was factual. So I had to separate the facts from the fiction. But I used to go to Sunday morning, Saturday morning's theater, watch Johnny Mark Brown and John Wayne and all those stars. And yes, I just now use some of those stories, just use them the way I want them. Bring fiction into real life because I live some of that real life. I was in Aden getting shot at in Aden, up in the hills of Aden. And you know how the bullets was hitting the granite and ringing in the ears. When they come looking for me, I couldn't hear them. They thought I had bought it. So yes, the stories, I can pick bits out of stories and mold them into my way that I want to express them.
Well, they're very entertaining. You were a gifted writer, and the stories just jump off the page and want to make you keep reading to continue the story that Michael, just a remarkable life, A Hunter's Life Lived by Michael Hunt, H-U-N-T-E. A couple minutes left in the program. You moved to London. You mentioned it wasn't quite swinging at the time, but it's still London.
No, it wasn't swinging.
Yeah, there are about, 300 languages being spoken in the city of London. It's such a diverse area. What's it like there? And it sounds like you've found a home in London.
Oh, yes, yes. I will not be without it. I live here. And at the time, it is the empire came together. The empire came, people from all over the British Empire, some reason, emerge on London. But they had done it in the 40s because the empire asked them to come and fight. And they did that in 1939-41, but they also did it in 1914-18. People just arrived because they thought that the British was under attack from the Nazis. And they were coming to fight. And then they came to build. Because London was, you want to say, I saw bomb London. When I came to London, London still had bomb sites in it. Right one next to me was a mother's hospital. It was bombed out. That was, now it's a home, but it was a bomb. Yes. It was a crater. I saw craters in London. And the food came in with the emigrants. Now, London is the best food in London. When I came, all there was roast beef and Yorkshire pudding. Oh, I trained as a chef. And I fed the Queen in 1977. Well, I was one of the chefs.
Interesting.
Who, when she visited the Baltic Exchange, which was later blown up by some unhealthy people, wouldn't mention them, but you know who they are.
Yes.
The Queen came to lunch, and I was one of the chefs who catered for her. That can be checked by the time she came to the Baltic Exchange in 1977, or her Jubilee year. I was there.
There is so much more to talk about and so much more that Michael will write about in his next book. I mean, until I watched The Crown, I'd forgotten how extensive the British Empire was. We could spend a whole program talking about the monarchy.
We can, yes, definitely.
I mean, there's so much more to talk about. But I tell you what, go get A Hunter's Life Lived, read that, enjoy that. Michael, when do you think the next book will be out? What's it look like?
Well, reasonable? I've got two at the moment. The next one I've written, it's already written, it's now being corrected by a friend of mine, dear friend, called Caroline. It's called AWOL, Absent Without Leave. And I am working on, I'm working on a robbery at the moment. I'm working on writing on a robbery.
Okay, that sounds better, yes.
That sounds much better.
I thought maybe you were going to... Yes.
Yes, it's where he hides the money. I'm using my wall here. And he hides the money in a wallpaper. The method where the bees use.
Oh, okay.
A honeycomb.
Yes.
He hides the money in a honeycomb in the wall by drilling through the wall, drilling through the solid brick, and hiding the money and then papering over it. That's your spoiler.
Well, I hope we have a chance to talk about this. So much going on in Michael's life. This A Hunter's Life Lived. The book is available now. You'll find it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the usual places. If you're Googling, Michael Hunt is H-U-N-T-E. The book is A Hunter's Life Lived. We'll have all that information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Michael, been a pleasure to have you on the program. So much more we can talk about next time. Thank you for being
definitely.
Thank you for being with us. This was a lot of fun. Good luck over there. Stay healthy and keep writing, and we'll talk some more.
Thank you. Thank you, Rick. Thank you very much. Yes,
thank you,
it was
sir.
A pleasure speaking to you, and wish you well.
Thank you. A Hunter's Life Lived. Michael Hunt is the author. Book available at Amazon. Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. We're back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.